Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Shift, the podcast that aims to tell the no-holds-barred truth about being a woman post-40. Created and hosted by me, journalist and author, Sam Baker. This week's guest is a writer, photographer, crofter, and expert at the dark art of being alone. Tamsin Kalidas lived a relatively anonymous life on a small Scottish island until she wrote her memoir, I Am an Island, about her experience of moving from London to the comparatively remote Hebrides. In doing so, she was living the dream of every midlife woman I know. Or was she?
On that day when I walked in, I really felt this was my home, and I also felt that I knew it from before, and it's something that's grown stronger and stronger over the years. I think with my Celtic thread, land has always been part of my DNA. It's there in my blood.
From her stone croft, no heating, and on the day we talk, bloody freezing, Tamsin is disarmingly honest about infertility, becoming perimenopausal in her 30s, and adapting to life as an older single woman in a community built on family. She also talks about living in nature, how wild swimming saved her, and the benefits of choosing the harder path. She was speaking to me from the Hebrides, so apologies for the occasionally shonky sound. Welcome to The Shift, Tamsin. It's lovely to have you. Because I can see you are in the most unusual place, please tell the listeners about the room you're in, about where you are.
So I'm sitting in the very old part of the cottage, and I've got bare stone walls behind me. Those are about 3 foot thick, and they're actually built from the stones that have been prized up from the land here. And, you know, you can really feel that intimacy of the land within the house. It's very cold here just today because my old stove has packed up, and I'll be lighting a fire a bit later. I'm generally quite warm in the mornings, having done my rounds with the sheep and, you know, had a swim. So, and it's a beautiful, bright day, very early light over the mountains this morning, crystal clear, orange amber lights. And that's definitely the spring on the way with a very hard frost.
And you're on, we're not allowed to name the island, are we? Although, you know, internet. So you're in the Hebrides, yeah?
Yeah, I'm in the Hebrides. I'm on a small island, and I've got a fantastic range of mountains right the way round. So I've got Nevis on one side and Bennevere, which is the ancient mountain of the Thunderbolt, sheltered in a sense by that mountain range and the bigger peaks. And we have kind of like a microclimate in the sense that we don't have huge elevations here. So quite often that heavy fall scuds over the top and we have a little bit of the drier weather here, but it all depends what time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been on the island 17 years now. I mean, it's a really huge transition, isn't it, from Notting Hill, where you worked in advertising and, you know, lived a kind of a London life. I'm sure there are loads of people listening who are thinking, fantasy, that's my fantasy, I'd love to do that. Can you tell us a bit about the decision that you and your then partner Rab made to up sticks and make this enormous change?
Sure. So we were living in West London, which I loved. It was a real sort of community hub. I had a really great network of friends there, and actually family living quite close as well, who'd moved up from the countryside. And I had been working in advertising and publishing and media, but I'd had a really big car smash. And that really drew a line, and I had to really take stock. And with that, obviously, then I wasn't earning And within that healing process, that kind of opened up a different sort of world that I've been sort of dabbling in, I suppose, for a little while. But I actually retrained and I got into alternative and natural medicine. So as I started off working alongside trauma victims, necessity then meant that we couldn't really afford to stay in the heart of Notting Hill. Suddenly I'd stepped off that career ladder. And my partner was creative, so we didn't really have the means to sort of be in that particular network. So we moved up the road. We found a place that we needed to do up really from scratch. And we were both then working from home and working in our environment. And actually, we're at a time when there was a great big transition that happened within that neighbourhood. Previously, it had been very family orientated and there were just problems. And we were right on the corner of territory wars. Events conspire in such a way that it becomes absolutely imperative that we need to move out. You know, we have firecrackers coming in through the front door. We had just really an assault on the building and also, you know, various individuals within the neighbourhood. I was longing for children and a family. I was in my very early 30s and we'd already had quite some disappointment. So, yeah, we sat down and we made the decision. What do we want? We asked those questions. What is it that we're after? And we both of us wanted to get off that very tippy seesaw where if you go to relax, you jump on a plane and you go away. And we wanted life and work much more in sync together. And within that, to be living much more closely to a quieter, more peaceful environment, understandably, given what we were leaving. And we really wanted to live without all of those greater big expenses, I suppose. So looking at the choices that we'd made previously, we were almost kind of putting our own belt and braces on by taking on more expense than we could actually manage. So we really had a very, very simple dream: find somewhere which over a number of years we would do up and try for family. So we looked everywhere, and in the end, we came full circle back to Scotland. And I say full circle because I do have very strong Celt and Scot threads in my background, but my partner was from more of a Scots family. And a lot of my childhood, long weeks of the Easter and summer holidays, were spent in a very basic cabin up in the Cairngorms in the forests there. So for me as a child, quite a disruptive childhood, that for me was really the essence of being able to express oneself and live freely. So we went to look, and then in that way that sometimes happens in life, it finds you. And that's really what happened. We, by chance, saw an advert in the Open Times and we thought, we've just got to go and look. And 6 weeks later, we were in.
It feels like one of those meant to be things, doesn't it, when things like that happen?
Regardless of all of our greater planning, actually, when it happened on the day, I don't know what it was, and I'm really struck by this. I really felt, as soon as I walked into the cottage within this room here that was in a much more dilapidated state, but still the same bare walls, you know, the lintel that I have behind, that was put in by us when we realised just that whole back end of the house was being held up by a cart axle. But on that day when I walked in, I really felt this was my home, and I also felt that I knew it from before. And it's something that's grown stronger and stronger over the years. I think with my Celtic thread, land has always been part of my DNA. It's there in my blood. My coming here possibly even reanimated those archetypal tensions and frictions that are written into history that perhaps just sparked alive when I came here, and with my particular path when I was left here then as a woman without children, in a vulnerable, marginalised position within society, with a healing background, and who was known for already their connection with nature and wildlife and animals and so on. So I think there was a bigger framework to my experience behind that.
You touched then on being left alone on the island. Without going into any detail, you and Rab split up and he leaves and you stay. And how long had you been there at that point?
So that would have been probably about 7 years.
So you've now stayed there on your own longer than you were there with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I don't know you, I've never met you before, I've only read the book. You seem happier, maybe with hindsight, there on your own than before. Is that fair?
Well, there were joyful times. You know, we came up, we were very recently married. It was our honeymoon. You know, there was so much love and anticipation and hope. And I think our route might have been very different had we been able to realise that dream of having a child. But as anyone will know that's been through even shorter times of struggling, you know, it really is a very destructive, uniquely, agonisingly destructive and painful process. And I went through every single hoop and stage and process of that. You know, if nothing else did, I think that process really broke me down. And also my partner, because, you know, I think also being quite so connected in with a community, you know, I was working in a school with young children. Mm. And he was actually working on the ferry. He was part of the crew for a little while. That seasonal progression and shift and change is, it was all made up of these wonderful rhythms of family structures. And I think belonging would have been very different for us and would have been a much easier pathway had we been able to have children. You know, alongside that, we're doing up a place and you've got all of those stresses that come with that. Now, when I'm here, life's a lot calmer. And I think it's something to celebrate, actually, being a woman living on one's own. I've not been in a relationship consciously for a very long time. There was maybe a year when I had maybe a date or two, but I've been so immersed in really trying to gather up all of these broken threads and to really stitch myself back into a different fabric and one that now works much more holistically. There hasn't been room to have that type of relationship with another person. And actually now I've been through really the hard, lonely years with that as well. That's to be acknowledged. Interestingly, it's not really something I miss. If life shows itself, that's something different. But living here alone is, it's a wonderful experience. And I'm not alone because I do have very good friends within the community and also in the wider mainland. You know, in the last year in lockdown, you know, I really have been living solitary and fortunately had the skills to do that. When you're within nature, my own experience is that I never feel alone. And I imagine that other people understand what that feels like.
Do you feel you would have been accepted more easily by the community if you'd been a mother? And
absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of friends who unfortunately their own relationships have broken up late 30s, early 40s, you know, there's a sort of period, isn't there, where they said it was a real struggle. It was a real shock. I mean, it was like a slap round the face because, you know, normally when you might have been welcome before, suddenly something shifted. Perhaps, it, you know, it's different with people perhaps that you've grown up with. But when you're in a newer community, you're not quite placeable with community living and a lot of drink is involved and that's all part of the culture. When people perhaps behave in a way that makes it difficult for you to stay in that environment, you know, it became a sort of more sensible thing to start to find my own pathway and actually to cultivate and to manifest and invite different friendships to come and find me as well. I think it works both ways. You know, and the energy that we put out always has a ripple effect. You know, I work alongside GP practices, but also in my private work. I do a lot of energy work and things like this and with acupuncture and natural medicine in all sorts of diverse ways. You know, how we approach others starts way before we come even to a point of physical proximity. It's almost that feeling of when we think about somebody and the phone rings and it's that very same person. We do have a collective unconsciousness and a collective consciousness. Very interesting, I think, when that starts to flex. So I think, you know, we're very aware. It's like walking into a room, you know which side of the room you're going to feel welcome. And sometimes you might even change your mind halfway across the room. And you then just happen to find the person that you're always meant to speak to standing right next to you. So I think all of these things come into play, you know, and I'm very aware of this and I'm going to be involved in a new platform for women that's being launched quite shortly called Noon. And it's all a collaboration of women sort of in their sort of 40 somethings and we're all at that midlife time and actually finding a supportive space where you know, these issues can be very openly discussed and shared. And a lot of people are talking about menopause now in their sort of late 40s and early 50s, some people even later. For me, it happened right about the time when I was, my fertility treatment failed, and might even have been triggered by that. So, you know, I've been living an older life for a very long time and without any community around to discuss that. And really, nature has been the great solace and wisdom provider.
Like you say, support, it can be really hard to come by going through a, you know, normal, for want of a better way of putting it, menopause. So, I mean, how did you cope? Even if you'd had a lot of friends, it sounds like it was happening to you maybe 10 years before it happened to other people. I mean, did you have anywhere to turn?
Yeah, I just used my own hands-on nature skills, I suppose. You know, I used medicinal herbs that I found out on the croft. So things like blood nourishment, like dandelion and nettle and chicory and all of these kind of natural resources that are there. I really did a lot of reading up of the older folklores and remedies, and also, I guess, with the sort of botanical knowledge that I have, you know, so that was really helpful. I self-treated myself with acupuncture, which helped, but actually I also swam my way through it as well. Sometimes the path that you choose is not always the easiest one. I'm very glad that I did it this way, without any of the conventional supports, because sometimes we euthanize that journey. We all have different tolerance points. I had no support, so there was no alternative, I suppose. And the support that I had asked for just wasn't available in the area that I'm living within. So sometimes you have to write your own narrative. And sometimes, and for me, that was so helpful. But oh my goodness, you know, the growth and the learning that comes out of that, we block ourselves off from sorrow and suffering. When you really journey through, it is like journeying through the winter. And, you know, we really need to go into our cave and find the truths that are waiting for us there, and to then bring them out into the light and reconstruct our lives on the basis of those, and also then to be able to share them with others. So on this platform that I mentioned, I'm going to be celebrating a great many of the different things where women do have a pathway and meaning and so much to give to and share with others when it doesn't go in that normal trajectory. And, you know, thinking about even Gen X, there's a whole great number of women who are also electing not to have children. There is a conscious decision as well for women to be sort of pushing back some of these boundaries and, expressing themselves perhaps more truly to how their own unique circumstances are asking them to adapt.
So you had a really tough time when you first moved to the island. You've been there 17 years now. Have things moved on, improved?
Yes, absolutely. I would say it was always a minority, and it was there right from the start. That grudge was very deeply rooted in the land. And I've been here now for, as you say, near on 17 years. And the landscape and wider territory is changing. And yet in other ways, it remains the same. And I guess that's true of any community, isn't it? You know, it's a reality that in any society, certain groups are more dominant than others. Sometimes, unfortunately, they thrive on aggressive or belittling behaviours rather than on fostering understanding and empathy.
Sorry to interrupt you. Did you find that it was a particularly patriarchal sort of society that you just weren't, almost more so than you were used to?
Yeah, I think so. And partly because it was so rural and very agricultural, and the way that that balance of roles was employed and how it showed itself was very much a very, very traditional split of roles. So when I then was left, you know, to look after the croft with my two broken hands and really, you know, halfway down on my knees already after a much longer struggle, it became very, very difficult to thrive within that community because, one, you didn't want to be asking, I guess, for too many helps and favours that you weren't physically able to return at that point. And that also can kind of set up a very difficult system of weights and balances where you're kind of indebted. And I think as a woman on your own, that puts you in a very vulnerable situation that can also be taken advantage of. So I'm by no means the only one. There were others too here that that suffered as well. And I guess when there's empathy, those dominant structures will collapse or implode because they become powerless. But it takes certain things like this a little bit longer to move on. But interestingly, the behaviour that I struggled with very definitely was a minority, but it clearly struck a chord both here and in the wider world. So I guess, you know, there's the other aspect too that I mentioned about the threads that are still woven from history into the role of women living childless and alone or out with those normal family structures. And there's also the sad reality that this behaviour goes on everywhere.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Has it changed as you've got older? Has the language that's used about you improved, got worse?
It's just changed, hasn't it? And it's interesting to reflect on how not just the content of that language changes, but also the tone of it. So this Sunday, I was kind of taken by surprise. I was planting bulbs in the garden. I stand at a distance from the single track road, but I stopped what I was doing because there was a dumper truck and a vehicle ahead of me. And it was crawling down the road in sight, gears screaming, lots of yelling, a typical weekend spree that still goes on. And both stalled at the dead end of my track. And inside, there were about, you know, four, five, six men who, noticing me, started yelling abuse. And it was the language I was struck by. So it went along the lines of, "There's an old cow. She's a fucking old cow. Get back inside, you fucking old cow." You know, and it was just, I didn't kind of really know what to do.
Enraging, isn't it?
Yeah.
What did you do? How do you respond to that?
As with a lot of people, you know, I'm relaxed. I'm there on a day off and I'm just sort of in the garden and with my flowers. And so there's that moment of sort of shock and being speechless. And then you think, well, do I confront it? No, I don't, because there's that level of drink, clearly. Yeah, and it's really afterwards that I sort of reflected on it. And I wondered how many older women experience more active notice, just like I have done, you know, harassment, tonal abuse.
Yeah, totally. I think it's a really, really common, actually. And you go from, you know, that if you were a person who got whistled at by builders, so you go from that kind of form of abuse and intrusion to, you know, you're an old bag. Yeah. You know, or you're a bossy old cow. And those words that are kind of are always used against women, but they throw in old as well. It's like that's the ultimate kind of sin. And I'd wondered whether being on the island and as you've kind of aged a bit, whether the kind of other thing that happens in midlife, which is you kind of become invisible, you know, they don't see you anymore, whether that would have made things better for you, whether you'd become less visible, but it doesn't sound like it has.
No, and I think it's the case for anyone who's, again, out with the dominant groups. You know, misogyny is written into our history and it's as prevalent today, albeit often underground. But then when it comes up, yeah, I think we all know when it hits us and it needs to be confronted and challenged.
When I was researching The Shift, the book that preceded the podcast, there was an awful lot of reference in some of the older books to, you know, the wise woman or the witch, and the way that women, as they get older and arguably postmenopausal, become pushed into that box. And that is, you know, not necessarily a bad thing, but is regarded from the wider society as a negative. You know, the woman who lives on her own, who doesn't have children, who is arguably at one with nature or not. And something you touched on earlier made me wonder if you see, or indeed if the other islanders see you in that sort of a way, as a woman who goes her own way and is a bit over there.
I think there's something very much written into history on that. We look back and it's still very present with us. So yes, I would agree with that. I am outfacing with people because of my links within a wider and more established healing community. You know, so I am with the Royal Society of Medicine, I am with the British Acupuncture Council, and, you know, I have those regulatory qualities. Yet what I love to bring into my work are more of the older ways. And so, yeah, drawing back into literature, drawing back into even my own past where, you know, with a BA and an MA studying the Celtic and Norse, and also with my own Indian background, you know, the ancient myths and narratives and threads that are all wound up within this bigger concept of not just what it means to be a female, but almost like the sacred aspect of that, and how sometimes, you know, in our modern secular world, there isn't necessarily the space for that either. It's slightly off, but I would also note that, you know, there's a great big reconnection within society, particularly with women, that's going on right now, and actually wanting to tap into that. And I'd really encourage people to do that, because we all have this deeper intuitive sensory body. And sometimes we are so disconnected with that, perhaps through habitually running ourselves quite so fast, giving out to so many different people in so many different ways. And sometimes, you know, particularly with children, sometimes it actually becomes hard to actually tune in and to really work with that inner voice. And this is something that I work with very closely, and it's all about rewilding oneself within whatever landscape we find, because all of our truths lie within. So it's actually starting to tap into that little inner voice. Sometimes, you know, you're just about to go and do something, and there'll be just this sense that, well, should I be doing that right now? Or am I actually equipped at this point in time to be able to deal with or to have the necessary resilience to deal with this right now? Might it be better to reorchestrate how I'm going to sort of schedule my week and things like this? And I think the closer that we get into starting to listen more deeply, that opens out a whole other world. And I'd actually connect that into other frameworks, because they're all sort of saying the same thing. So let's say with meditation, perhaps with whatever other rituals or, you know, physical activities that people do. So that wonderful commune that so many of us are getting when we go into wild water and swimming, that sense of complete being, and without that segmentation, we become so in touch in that present moment and in our full sensory body. That's something really to be celebrated. And I think a lot of people are finding that through lots and lots of different ways at the moment, particularly with the wild swimming.
Sea swimming has been a really, really important coping mechanism for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the sea really found me. Living on an island surrounded by sea, you know, that's one thing. It's always present, and with the weather and the elements and so on. But so I found the water at a particularly difficult time in my journey. Initially, just having that cold shock just kind of knocked me out of that really sort of overwhelming sense of life just crashing down on top of me. And you know, it's well documented, isn't it, with all of the physiological benefits, the opiate release and the endorphins. And I'm also interested in it from a sort of mental health point of view, because the process of, for me, a daily discipline, it became like a martial art of going to the water every single day of the year. For 4 years, I was swimming at dawn, which up in the Hebrides, you know, that's quite a punishing regime. And I swim without a wetsuit. It made me very aware of how we either open to or close off from very small decisions or situations within life. So that process of stripping off on a freezing cold shore, you know, in the wintertime, sometimes minus 15 degrees wind chill. You want to get into the water. Water's going the water's going to be much warmer than the outside air. And you have all these kind of images about what our heads are telling us that feels like. So first reaction is, oh, my God. But it is like a training. Yeah, it brings you very, very close in with that deeper power of breath that women harness in childbirth, that we use when we are in our normal sort of day-to-day, more sort of wild connection again with our lives. So fight or flight, the way through both of those is again through breath. And it brings you very, very up close to the present. And you stop worrying about anything else apart from what's happening right here and now in this moment. And it's incredibly empowering.
Looking back at the Tamsin who arrived on the island 17 years ago, what are the big changes?
I think this sense of abundance with very little, really living so simply. Yeah, I don't have a television. I don't have all sorts of other distractions, I suppose. And that, again, brings me much closer into the voice of what it is that I'm trying to create. And I think that's a big difference. I'm not looking for external references. I love to read and I love to listen to all sorts of different things. You know, I'll watch film, but I make a time for it rather than having it on as a constant background noise and drip drip, which I find very disruptive to that process as an artist. And I think I have a really different shape to my community now. We all are much more supportive and collaborative, perhaps, than the community that I used to live amongst. And maybe that's also age and stage, you know, as women at this stage of our lives, we can let all that go. Yeah, I think that's a huge relief. Just kind of shed that and let's get on with the business of making life as good for each other and ourselves as we possibly can and building very, very strong communities. And we each know where we belong. That's an important point of discernment as well. It's kind of really knowing who your tribe is and being aware of everything else, but giving your heart and your whole self without holding back to the people with whom there is that real sort of connection and trust. I think that's been a big waking up and a growing up. And I think that found me, probably about 10 years ahead of the normal time that might have come. I've always been very attracted as well to spending time with older people because they have so much to share and it suits the pace that I like to live at as well. You know, I love to go into London still on the occasional times when I come down and I'll really, you know, have a blast and I'll love to meet up with people, but quality rather than quantity. There's a different way that, you know, an older gathering of people meets and it's much kinder. And I think that's how I like to live.
Oh, that's great. On the subject of aging, I was just really interested how, as a woman living slightly outside our normal society in terms of the avalanche of media and advertising and fashion and film and TV and the way that women, particularly women in the middle, if you like, vanish. So if you're living in the midst of that, that can be very oppressive and undermining and shaming, actually. And I wondered how it was for you, whether any of that impacted on you living outside of it, whether it still reaches you or whether you felt quite separate to that, unaffected by it.
I think it affects us all, doesn't it? And I think it's an onward journey. And I think the more people are starting to voice it, we can start to then shape and create a different narrative. And I think that's a really important process that is happening already now. You know, the fact that we're even talking about it here and on actually quite a few of your other, you know, episodes of The Shift. And it's a really great space to come and to be able to share these things. Maybe over time, we'll start to see things changing more radically in that way. I think it's important, you know, with any change, let's not do it in that great big sort of knee-jerk way. Again, we're all stitching our different threads into this fabric. How wonderful it's going to be when we start to, you know, really show these and share and celebrate each other's stories as well. That's something I'm looking forward to.
That's great. Okay. What's your emotional age?
Well, I wanted to say 35 because living here right now this year on the Croft, it really feels like full circle. And it was just really in those very young island days when we came here and it was all ahead of us. And I really have that great sense of potential and so much to look forward to just now. And yet I think probably I'm a lot older. I'm an old soul. And so I'd say I'm kind of almost ageless. I'd say I'm somewhere up there with those older women that have really lived and have suffered and have come through it and realised that's all part of where life is. And it's kind of something, again, to be celebrated because it's made us who we are. And I'm very fortunate in that. So maybe that's my sort of two sides.
It's really interesting. Could you recommend a book that has meant a lot to you or one that you've read recently that you've loved?
At the beginning of my book, I Am an Island, there's a very beautiful incantation from The Descent of Bridget. And it's actually taken from a book called The Kamina Gadelica. And it's a very sacred blessing. And it kind of crosses all sorts of different paradigms of, you know, the very old nature wisdom and then the later Christian wisdom. And it's all tied up within the ways that people used to interact and animate with the land. So it's by Alexander Carmichael. And it's the most fantastic book of source material from our older Celtic landscape threads, if you like. And I really lived with that very close by me when I was going through those hard years. And I still go back to it now. So that's been a fantastic support. And the incantation at the beginning in the Gaelic, it's a very old Gaelic, so this is archaic. It's not actually used now. But it reads, Ni chenchira chenimi nyomochian aloska mi halek a chalok moflanek ha chegushkar avahag nyom. And that translates as no fire shall burn me, nor moon shall blanch me, nor water shall drown me. And there's a kind of a longer version of that in my book. So
that's given me the shivers. What advice would you give younger women?
Listen in, start of the day, end of the day, make a quiet time to really be with yourself, because all of our wisdom lies within. And I really believe this. It's we're given prompts by our lives, by others, by landscape, by all of the deeper experiences that find us. But they're like little sparks of a match. The source is always within. And the sooner that process of tuning in starts and really active, conscious, deeper listening, as soon as that starts, that's when really life starts to open and the magic begins. That's all I'd say, I think.
That's brilliant. Name your old bird role model.
So I'd say the wonderful creator goddess that's here in the landscape. On the one side, she's the winter and the goddess of the winds and the cold and the kayak. And I'm actually in sight of her ancient seat here. And, you know, I've learned to predict the weather from watching the sun and the weather above that lip of the mountain. And then also her other face, which is that of the light. And that's the very ancient Bridget. And she is the goddess of light and of fire and of all that's ahead of us, I suppose. And here on the Croft, I'm also sitting on literally a very ancient Neolithic, the earliest seat of fire in this whole area. So there's this wonderful confluence of energies and my living right here in this room with the stone walls of the land, being guided by the land. So every day of my life here, I think she has to be my wise old bird.
So, certainly they don't get older or wiser than that, do they? What would be your superpower?
Nature. Yeah, everything in nature. And having lived it so immersively, you know, with the cold water swimming, living in the land, the hardships, the joys, all of that. And again, you know, everything that we might ever need to know is right there waiting to show us.
Brilliant. And last one, how many fucks do you give?
Well, you know, being an old soul, I might even reframe that. And I'd sort of say, you know, I just care about the earth and all that's in it so much. And so if it's within that context, everything, there's an infinite number. It's unquantifiable. My great longing would be that everybody really finds time to connect at a heart level, at a sensory level, so that it becomes then a matter of conscience rather than a cognitive idea about, you know, going to nature. We are wild within, you know, that wilder voice lies inside all of us. So I'd say whatever it takes to ignite and reanimate that, even if it's just for a moment, that for me would be worth everything.
That's really brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Thank you for listening. You can hear a new episode of The Shift each Tuesday on Acast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review, and follow, because it really does help other people find us. And if you'd like to know more about my own experience of shifting, my book, The Shift, How I Lost and Found Myself After 40, and You Can Too, is out now in paperback. See you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.